5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday edition of Beyond the Darkness. I'm Tim Dennison for Dave Schrader. We're going to do a special encore presentation today of Beyond the Darkness. You know, with Joshua P. Warren being in the news lately, having found a time portal out in Las Vegas, we figured we would bring a special encore presentation back to you with Joshua P. Warren, this time dealing with the subject of tulpas and the creation of thought forms, manifesting some monsters. And bringing back an old topic with an old friend and revisiting a popular subject here on today's Sunday edition of Beyond the Darkness. Here's Joshua P. Warren. Enjoy.
Good evening and welcome. This is the Friday edition of Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. This evening's show is one that really intrigues me. We've kind of dabbled in this subject over the last couple of weeks of Beyond the Darkness, especially with the Slender Man story. And we talked about the possibility of thought forms, of mind manifestations, tulpas. Can what we focus on, what we put thought behind, come to life? Can it get its own life from our energy focused upon it? Well, there's been a lot of scientific research behind this and a very famous experiment called the Philip Experiment. As a matter of fact, there was a movie out a few years back that was kind of based on that loosely about the idea of trying to create and manifest a paranormal being. Is that possible? Well, if you want to dig into this topic, there's one guy I know that's a go-to every time. Our good friend, researcher, paranormal investigator, world traveler, and he's here with us this evening, Joshua P. Warren, somewhere near the Bermuda Triangle, I've been told. Joshua, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, thank you so much, Dave. And let me just say, first off, congratulations on Beyond the Darkness, because I'm telling you, man, this podcast, it's exploding all over the internet. It's setting records. It's phenomenal how many people are listening all over the world, and it's a very exciting time. So I am just absolutely thrilled to be on the first week.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here with us, and I always love when we get the chance to talk, because I love to pick your brain. I know you like being challenged and not just having glossed over questions thrown your way. So tonight's going to be a challenge for both of us, because I really want to dig deep into this understanding and belief. Can we really manifest ghosts? Can we create the paranormal? Now, I know the book The Secret and the documentary came out, what, about 10, 15 years ago, all about the idea of calling upon the universe, creating a world that we want to believe and live in. And, you know, everything from manifesting a good parking space to getting the love of your life, meeting the right people, changing your life that way. Well, if that's possible, could our focus actually ignite life? Can it give life to the unknown? And I wanted to really discuss that with you because we've heard of these characters like Slender Man, who was an internet meme and now seems to be taking on a life of its own. These creepy ghost-like clowns, not just the people that were dressed like clowns going around, but there have been these ghost clowns, these monstrous clowns that will be there 1 minute, gone the next. When people are focused and have a fear, do you believe that they begin to feed an energy that can, in fact, breathe life into itself, Joshua? Or is this just too science fiction?
Well, this is an extremely important question, and I am absolutely delighted to have this conversation with you because, as you know, we can get deep in the rabbit hole with this one. Okay, well, first off, Dave, let's question what life is in general. The biggest mystery, perhaps, of all time is how this thing called the mind or the consciousness or the life energy connects with the body. It's that mind-body dilemma, because you see a person and that person is a physical thing and that person has emotions and memories and opinions, but you put that person under the microscope, you put that person on the medical slab and you cut their brain open and you look inside and you can't see any of that. It's sort of like a caveman looking at a TV and seeing all the little people dancing around on the screen and then breaking off the top of the TV and saying, where are they? Right? So we are confused by this sort of dualism, really, this idea that there is this physical structure and yet it doesn't give us any direct clues as to what the life form is. And, you know, Dave, I, for many years, was very, very doubtful when it came to these curse dolls and possessed possessions and things like that, but especially the dolls, like Robert the Haunted Doll down there in Key West. You know, I went down there and did a big investigation of Robert the Doll. And I thought, well, this is the silliest thing, the idea that this inanimate object could actually possess some kind of a life. But when I actually started thinking about it more deeply, after I investigated Robert the Doll and then collecting haunted dolls for my Asheville Mystery Museum in Asheville, North Carolina, I gradually became convinced that some of these dolls actually do possess something lifelike. And then I realized quickly, well, hey, if we can't explain how that the human body physically also possesses this mysterious essence called life, then why should we be so quick to judge whether or not some other physical object might also be able to possess this thing called life, especially if it's charged with that? And hopefully you and the listeners can see where I'm going with this. What I'm saying is maybe life is more than the biological process. Maybe life actually comes from this idea that energy can be transferred in many different ways from one living form to another living form. And that therefore, these thought forms, these tulpas that we're going to dig into tonight, might be an example of how that a person or a group of people are able to focus and concentrate under various circumstances, whether it's under a very intense scenario or over a period of time, in order to literally give birth to another living thing that bypasses the usual version of biological birth. And so that's the essence of what we're digging into here. And I think that it can be applied to many, many different things. And I'm sure we'll go over all these examples tonight.
One that really has intrigued me, and we talked about this a few weeks ago on the show, was Slender Man, from internet meme to method of murder. And the idea that this creation, this online internet creation, to win a contest and come up with a creepy character that you could hopefully fool paranormal investigators with, seems to have taken a life of its own. Now people claim that they do see this and that they have seen this. And I began to look at some of these stories, Joshua, and what I found most fascinating was it didn't really just start. This creature, or a very similar creature like it, has always existed and has been around in different cultures at different time periods in life. And you look through these different historic points and these different religions and belief systems, and you will find this large, tall, skinny, faceless creature, sometimes with the spidery legs in the back, but it's this long, lean, creepy creature. And it reminds me, one of my guilty pleasure horror movies is Wes Craven's New Nightmare. And I don't know if you remember that one, but I thought it was genius, the idea that to kind of reinvent and reinvigorate this franchise, which had pretty much tapered off and had become kind of a joke in the sense of your main horror killer is now just a wisecracking quip, you know, killer. And it's kind of taken away from the first terror of the original Nightmare on Elm Street. And I thought it was pretty genius that Wes Craven created this movie to make it a movie within a movie. And spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, the whole idea is that Freddy Krueger, this character that he created, there was another being out there, this demonic being that kind of attached to the energy that people gave to Freddy. The love, the attention, the desire, the nightmares of their own. It fed this thing. And then when they killed off the series, it pissed this demon off. It irritated it because it liked that attention. So it continued to kind of take its form, and it started to attack the original actors and directors of Nightmare on Elm Street. So it's a fascinating concept that maybe these, if we want to call them eternals or elementals or demonic realm, may exist. And when we give enough thought and credence and intent to a manifestation, one of these kind of steps into the hollow and becomes these beings, so that they might have always been there. We think we created them, but we've always been there. It just needed the spark to come back to life. When you think about that and knowing your research, do you see that there's a pretty good chance that could be what's going on?
Oh, yeah. You know, for listeners who are sort of new to this concept, to help them open their minds, I've got to just quickly go over the two most classic cases that we often refer to help explain this. In the 1920s, there was an author named Walter Gibson who lived in Greenwich Village in New York. He was a part-time magician, literally, you know, an entertainer, an illusionist, but he made his money from writing books. And during that time, The Shadow was a very popular radio program, you know, The Shadow Knows. And so it became so popular that Walter Gibson got a contract to start writing these novels about the Shadow character. And he was just so prolific. This guy would hole himself up in his apartment there, and he would crank out a full-length novel once a month. He wrote, I think, something like 30, 40 of these novels over a period of years. And he did little else during that period of time, as you can imagine, and they were very successful. Well, for years after he moved out of that apartment, people who lived in there said the apartment was haunted by his fictional characters. They would literally see the shadow whipping around a corner or a villain running across a hallway. Now, this is because we can imagine that he was focusing so intensely during that period of time. He was imagining these characters so vividly that he was able to somehow give birth to them, very much like Freddy Krueger may have been born in that example. Now, that's one guy focusing very intensely. The second case takes us to the 1970s in Ontario, in Canada. There was a group of paranormal enthusiasts who decided to do what is now known as the Philip Experiment. They would get together about once a month, and they would just talk about all things mysterious. And they figured they would create this fictional character they called Philip and focus on the idea that he was real, and they created a whole profile for this guy who was born in the 1600s. He was a medieval warrior. He was part of the aristocracy, and they had a sketch made of him. They came up with his favorite food and his favorite color and all these details about his life and how he committed suicide in the end, and they fleshed it all out. And then afterward, they started to speak about him from month to month as if he were real. And anytime there was a little noise, they couldn't explain, oh, there's Philip, you know, or if there was some kind of an odd occurrence, well, that must be Philip. And they started using their imagination. Well, after about a year of this, guess what? Philip materialized. Philip became real. And that's when they realized, uh-oh, maybe we shouldn't have manifested a butt-kicking medieval warrior, because he started kicking their butts,
right,
and throwing things around and shoving people against the wall. And there's this whole list of things that Philip did. And that incident has inspired two movies, one of them called The Apparition, which was a Warner Brothers movie. And I was a technical consultant for that. And we will certainly talk about a behind-the-scenes experiment that I did for that movie, manifesting one of these tulpas. But basically, yes, it appears that either a person who is very intense or a group of people who have a collective sort of vision of something they focus on over time, or, as I discovered, a person who might be, shall we say, technologically enhanced, as in my experiment where I took a person like investigator Shelley Wright and hooked her brain waves up to a magnification system to project them. There are all these different, you know, versions you can use, but ultimately the idea is that, yes, you can take some kind of a mental image and manifest it externally as something that takes on its own independent existence. And I, Dave, have literally seen some of these very scary tulpas with my own two eyes.
All right. Well, don't leave us hanging. Let's get into some of these encounters that you've had where you've seen this firsthand. Because I know we have a lot of listeners out there who are sitting on the fence. They're skeptical. Does this really occur? Are we just tricking ourselves? Which, you know, you talk about like the 1111 time prompt phenomena. I personally do not believe that there's anything paranormal behind it. Personally. Only because once you recognize a pattern, your brain is trained to notice it more. And people will say, look, I looked at the clock and it's 1111 again. Well, you probably looked at it at 1102 and 1107, and you'll look at it again at 1123. But 1111 stands out to you because it's a recognizable number. It's a pattern. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1234 in the afternoon or evening is kind of that same thing. 333. So you've got that going on. And knowing how the mind works as a mnemonic trigger, and it's always looking to make sense of chaos, it makes me wonder if, are we really having paranormal experiences? Or are we creating, I don't know what the right word is here, but creating a static in our own energy flow that gives us the perception that something paranormal is taking place because of our expectations?
Well, in this particular case, you know, before I dig into the experiment that we did, mm-hmm, to create one of these actual creepy, you know, creepy is not the word, a scary tulpa. I want everybody to also understand that there is a very simple experiment that I did that every single person listening can also do at home. This is an experiment that I did 4 years ago. And, you know, I have this museum, the Asheville Mystery Museum in Asheville, North Carolina, heart of the oldest mountains in North America. And I have a laboratory there. And from time to time, I do workshops there. And in December of 2013, so not quite 4 years ago, I had a very special workshop. I invited 10 people to join me. And here is the, you know, basically what we did. I took all those 10 people and I sat them down in a room inside the Asheville Masonic Temple, which is this like four-story old historic beautiful building there in Asheville. My museum is in the basement. And I said, okay, we're going to take one person out of the group and we are going to, if you will, sequester that person. We're going to put that person in another room so that he or she is unable to hear what we're talking about. And once that person was in seclusion, I said, all right, now I have another room set off to the side here, and I'm going to go into that room, and I'm going to place an object on a table. Now, it could be the most mundane thing. It could be a roll of shipping tape, or it could be a cardboard box, or it could be something crazy, like, you know, some kind of a taxidermied octopus or something. You don't know what I'm going to pull out, and I'm going to sit it there. And I'm going to focus on that object for a bit. And then one by one, I want each of you to go into that room and focus on that object. And then I'm going to remove that object. And I want you to go back in there one by one and focus on that object, even though it's not there. Try to visualize it. Try to burn what you actually saw there before. Now burn it mentally into that spot. And I gave people what are called Tibetan emos, which are these little things you can put over your eyes to help you meditate. This whole report, by the way, is written up at joshuapwarren.com. All the details of this experiment, if anybody wants to try this themselves. And then I said, now, once you have all done that, I am going to have this person who has been sequestered go into that room and take as long as he or she wants to tell us what he or she thinks was the object. And I am telling you, Dave, I would swear on a stack of Bibles, and everybody in that room would do the same. Every single time we did this, the person who went into that room would come out and tell us in chilling detail what that object was. And it was blowing my mind. And this is a very simple thing. Again, I hope I've explained this properly so that anybody listening can go out and reproduce this themselves. But this is an example of how simple the process can be. So imagine what happened, Dave, when we took this and we decided to go to the next level and hook a person's brain up to a advanced system that would magnify that to the equivalent of 100,000 people thinking about the same thing at the same time, and we focused on a creepy dark figurine.
Now, with that said, Joshua, this sounds what we would call like a thought projection. You mm-hmm. have all of these people projecting an image mm-hmm. to be seen by the person who has no idea what they're going to go in and witness. Do you believe that that's what's actually going on? Is it a projection of our mind that's created this, or is it a manifestation of intention by the participants? Is there a difference between the two, between a projection and a manifestation?
Well, it may be that there is a difference, but I'm not sure that we have enough data to know exactly what that difference is, because the result appears to be the same. I mean, ultimately, I believe that the environment is a flexible medium that you can imprint things upon, that it's like a recording tape. And let me put it this way. After all my years of investigating ghosts in general, I have come to the conclusion at this point in my life that indeed most of what people call ghosts are these imprints or residuals or things that are just like a big replay, like an IMAX movie that gets recorded in the environment and plays itself over and over. And you might ask, well, how does that work? Well, we don't understand exactly how that works, but What I can tell you is that it seems to work kind of like a passive RFID chip. So in other words, an RFID chip is one of these little chips like you might find on a product at, say, Walmart. And it doesn't have a battery, and it's just sitting there doing absolutely nothing. But it's got a little circuit inside. It's totally passive. Now, if you take a product that's got that chip on it and you don't have it removed or deactivated in some way and you walk out the exit, well, as you go out the exit, it becomes bombarded with this electromagnetic field. And when that field hits it, suddenly it wakes up and it activates and it sends a signal back and the alarms go off. And I think that maybe our environment all around us is sort of like this infinite conglomeration of passive RFID chips that are capable moment by moment of recording and storing and being impressed by information. And some information is more dramatic and more strong and makes more of an impact. And so you have all this information in the environment, and some people can walk into a haunted place and have no experience whatsoever. And then you have other people who will walk in, and then that person shines his or her consciousness upon all these passive elements, and there happens to be a sympathetic resonance where it activates this information, and suddenly all this info that was passive becomes active and starts shining back, and that person starts having experiences. And so if you look at that from the ghost research standpoint and you start applying that to manifestation in general, it may be very similar that I might be able to go into a room and murder somebody, which I will never do, by the way. But if I do that, it's going to create a strong impression in all these little RFID chips. On the other hand, I could go into that same room and I could do, act out a play where I murder somebody. And if the actors are acting authentically enough, it might create the same sort of impression. I might not even need to do the play. I might be able to go in there, if I'm a guy like Walter Gibson, and just imagine it so intensely, so strongly, that it creates that same kind of an impression. And then when other people enter that space, it doesn't matter if it's something bad or something good. It's almost like we have created this thing that is holographic, that exists in that space, and that this is what is actually going to be perceived by certain people under certain circumstances as a tulpa or a thought form.
You know, that's what makes that really fascinating to me is, as a researcher for the television show Ghost Adventures, I'm constantly on the lookout for haunted locations, and every city and state I go into has some haunted theater. And not many of them have stories of a death on site, but they will talk about audience members appearing in the audience, sitting there, ghost images. You'll hear things on stage, laughter or crying. And a lot of them want to know why. Why is this? Well, when you're there in a live performance, and as you say, it's replaying, you're redoing this play over and over again. You're impressing and emoting into that area these pieces, this finessing of your emotions, and you're bringing an entire audience of, you know, hundreds or thousands together focused on the same experience. That makes a lot of sense of how that impression, how we may have these weird residual effects that take place, especially when it happens most is in the quiet theaters at night, when, you know, they're wrapping up for the evening or something along those lines. And what happens is you're finally taking away all the other distractions that you might be hearing all of that movement and seeing those things to begin with, but you're so distracted by life going on that you don't notice it. And as soon as you take all of that away, that's when it appears to be haunted. So it could be that that's why so many of these theaters and playhouses across the United States and around the world have so much energy and haunting structure built right into them that way.
I agree entirely. I mean, I have never seen a theater that's been around a long time that's not haunted.
Right.
And of course, the actors will tell you. I mean, that's one of the reasons the actors are so superstitious, because you get to a point where you start to, you know, think the way that we're thinking right now as we talk about this from this perspective, where you start to say, okay, what's the difference between reality and what we perceive as reality? When it comes to the mind and its relationship with the environment, what ultimately is a part of this mind-body-environment relationship, I mean, what is the difference between what a person is thinking and experiencing and impressing when it's real versus when it's fake? And it could be that this whole experience that we're having is just one big fake dreamlike experience. Now we're really getting philosophical here, but, you know, fine, so be it. You know, Dave, I'm a very vivid dreamer. And every night, as soon as I go to sleep, boom, I see things that are so vivid. I can't tell you the difference between what I'm dreaming and what's happening to me right now. It's that clear. And there are times, however, when I have these lucid dreams where suddenly I realize I'm dreaming, and now I can take control and I can start interacting with it. And at that point in time, that experience becomes magical, because ultimately now it's sort of like I'm Superman or whatever, and I can fly and I can lift buildings. You know, it just depends. But the point is, how do we know that that's not just one state of consciousness, and this is just another state of consciousness, and that maybe we're sort of in another dream state right now, and ultimately reality is more than simply what somebody tells you it is. It is about your experience, and sometimes that experience merges with the environment in a way where, hey, you're creating something that another person can also experience. Are we getting deep enough down the rabbit hole now?
It sounds like it. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about the experiment that Joshua Warren did and some of the experiences he's had with tulpas and thought forms. How much reality is there to this? You may be surprised to find out. But before we do that, I know what you're thinking. I can hear your thought forms out there. You want, no, you need the theater of the mind. My creation of terror. The real-life experience of Dan Hartman. I had read a book about the famed Philip experiment. The idea that thought could somehow give life to a paranormal experience, and it blew me away. I read everything I could find, watched every video out there, and decided I had to try this for myself. That proved to be the single scariest mistake of my life. I set about creating a character. I wanted to see if I could imagine a creature that I could somehow control and send to frighten my friends. What can I say? I was a stupid teenager. I was obsessed, and I just wanted to see this for myself. So I methodically planned out the character from its look to its backstory, wrote about it every day to train my mind to focus on it and to set my intention so that I could bring my creation to life. I tried to convince a few of my buddies to help me. I guess they thought this was just too weird science for them, and they declined, telling me I was just wasting my time and acting like an ass. So now I knew who my targets would be, and I couldn't wait to unfurl my little experiment on them. After close to 60 days of very intense focus and determination, I started to try and communicate with the creature. Now, I don't even want to write out the name of this thing, because I'm worried it will call something back into my life that I don't ever want to face again. I began by using the Ouija. Then I went to mirror scrying, and when that didn't work, I tried conjuring it with a pentagram that I drew on my floor with powdered chalk so I could easily clean it up and not be caught by my parents. Nothing seemed to be working, or so I thought. After my fifth night of experiments, I finally gave up, sure that I had wasted my time just as my friends predicted. But it was around 2 a.m, and I was finally starting to fall asleep, when I heard what could only be described as the sound of scratching coming from under my bed. At first I thought, Maybe it's just a piece of paper that blew under my bed, and the fan that I used to keep on for sleeping at night must just be blowing it around. Well, what can I say? It made sense to me at the time. But then the scratching noises began to get louder, and they seemed to be running under the entire length of my bed, from the head of the bed to the foot and back again. I tried to convince myself that it was just my imagination and that I had spent just too much time focused on creepy things. It was starting to play with my perceptions. Then it happened. The bed thumped, like someone pushed it from under, making the bed land hard on the floor. That shook me from my near slumber and definitely caught my attention. Everything was silent except the sound of the fan. And I wondered, did I just dream that moment? Was I caught between awake and asleep? Then the bed lurched again. This time it felt like the entire frame had been thumped and sent at least 4 inches into the air. It landed with a loud thud. My heart was in my throat. My palms were instantly sweaty, and I began breathing hard. I thought to myself, what in God's name was that? That's when I saw the closet door begin to rattle. The knob seemed to be twisting back and forth. The door shook in its frame. My eyes opened to the size of baseballs as I strained to see in the dimly lit room. Then the door popped the latch and slowly squeaked open, revealing nothing but a dark, inky, gaping pit behind it. I could hear movement coming from the closet, something shuffling slowly. And then a low, steady, growling noise began from under my bed. The bed began to shake like a small tremor, and I saw what appeared to be a large, dark form slowly emerge into my room from the closet. It stood upright like a man, but it was broad. Its head was large and oddly shaped, almost like a giant dog with horns. I wanted to scream, but I couldn't. I just lay there, staring. This was just how I had imagined my creature to look. After 60 days of intense concentration, I was seeing my creation standing before me. But that didn't answer the other question. What was making my bed shake? What was underneath and shaking my bed? I was trapped. It stood there staring, and the growling from under my bed began again. I slowly raised my blankets up to my face, poked my head under there, and laid motionless, praying that whatever magical blanket gods were watching, they would be at the ready and protect me. Then the bed stopped shaking. The growl faded into the sound of the fan, and then there was silence. I laid there for what felt like hours, but I'm sure it was no more than 10 to 15 minutes, still barely breathing, when I began to lower the blanket from my face to scan my surroundings. That's when my blood ran cold. This hulking creature was positioned over my bed, reached out its claw-like hand and ripped back the blankets, leaned in slowly so its face was only inches from my own. I could see the definition in the long snout. Its glassy, large eyes stared into mine, and it sneered in a voice that was a mix between a hiss and a groan.
"Shouldn't mess with things you don't understand, boy."
I swear to God, my heart stopped. I was terrified, and then it backed up. More like floated backwards towards the door of my closet. Then it lowered its head once more and said,
"Don't make me come back. We don't play games."
And the door slammed with the might of 10 angry teenage girls. I flicked on the light in my room, and my bedroom door burst open. My parents charged in. "What the hell? It's the middle of the night. Why are you slamming doors and banging around up here?" I was speechless. I just quietly apologized and ducked back under the covers. My parents left the room, and I just lay there, staring at the ceiling, waiting for the rise of the sun. So be careful what you want to focus on, what you think about, because you may just get it.
All right, let me break it. If there's anyone here, you can speak to me now through this device.
Not 10 minutes.
How many people are here with me right now? Where exactly are you?
Welcome back to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. My guest this evening, Joshua P. Warren, will be back with us in just a few moments. Before we get any further, I also want to make a quick mention and clear something up. I've been talking about our connection with Amazon.com. If you go to podcastone.com, click on the killer deals link. Click on it. You'll see it there. Click on that. Go down and find the Beyond the Darkness banner. When you click on that, it's going to open up to all of our advertisers. You'll see HelloFresh, you'll see Amazon, and if you place an order there for any of the books or movies, DVDs, anything that you hear mentioned on this show, it's going to go a long way by using that link to help support our show. And many of you have written in and said, do I just have to buy the books or the DVDs? No, you can buy anything. Anything and everything that you would normally buy through Amazon.com, just go use our link. It will help support our show. You don't have to pay anything extra. It's just a small percentage of every sale that goes through our link on the site under Killer Deals. Go check it out at podcastone.com, Killer Deals. Find our banner for Beyond the Darkness. You'll see the little ghost holding the microphone. Click that banner. And then you'll get a choice for those of you in Canada, those of you over in Europe, and those of you here in the United States. Choose the banner that coincides with you and your region. When you place any order at all, then you'll be able to get access to order and help out our show. Again, at no extra cost. So make sure you visit that. And let me remind you, go check out HelloFresh.com. If you sign up right now, this is a great meal delivery service for fathers like me, even mothers that you're just intimidated. You don't have much time to put together really good meals. You can get the help from them. They've put together these specially balanced meals. All the pieces you need are right there. They give you the entire puzzle, tell you how to put it together and how to do it. It takes all the intimidation factor out of eating healthy and eating right for you or you and your family. So go check out HelloFresh.com right now. If you use keyword darkness at checkout, that's keyword darkness, you can save $35 off your first purchase. So please go do that. Take advantage of that and let them know that you're a fan of Darkness Radio. All right, we're back. Tonight we're talking about thought forms. We're talking about mind manifestations. Does what we think about really affect our environment? Can we create the paranormal simply by focusing and thinking about something? It does make me wonder. Our guest tonight is researcher, investigator, author, Joshua P. Warren. And Joshua, you know, one of the things I'm curious about, you know, my mother passed away in November. I've tried not to focus on having a ghostly experience with my mom because I don't want to manifest something that maybe is nothing more than a projection of my mind's eye. I want it to happen organically if she shows up. I don't want it to be something that happened because I'm so intent and focused on seeing it. But here we are 60 days out. I have had no experience with the spirit of my mother. So it does start to make me question. And for those of you listeners, you might be surprised to find out the host of Darkness Radio is a skeptic. I'm a skeptical believer. I've had my own experiences, but it doesn't mean I don't question what those experiences are. Do you think that some people that have multiple experiences, it's not so much because they're open to it, it's because they're going in, lending their energy to creating or manifesting an experience?
Well, yes, Dave, I absolutely believe that because, I mean, you very seldom come into contact with the spirits of good, intelligent people. And I know that may sound pretty subjective, but let me sort of break this down a little bit because, you know, I'm first and foremost a ghost and spirit researcher. So, when it comes to this issue, Dave, you know, I have found that over the years, you find very few ghosts, if you will, that are ghosts of smart, you know, intelligent, well-meaning people. And now, again, we have to think about this difference between the imprint, which is just something that's redundant, that replays itself over and over in the environment because it's burned in like a big movie. That's, of course, not going to change. And entities. And entities are these literal kind of interactive, unpredictable spirits, disembodied spirits. And I've always felt that and I can actually give you some good examples for why I feel this way, but I feel that people who die with a guilty conscience are often afraid of sort of moving to a different bandwidth of this information grid that you move into when you die. And listeners might be saying, what is he talking about, an information grid? Well, that's essentially what the spirit realm is. The internet is a very good model for what the actual sort of matrix is, really, that you move into when you physically die. There is this sort of vast, interconnected, holographic quantum grid. And what you are is not your physical body. I mean, I could take a person's physical body and squish it down in a great machine and remove all the water and all the empty space, and what would be left over would be about the size of a pea that you could roll between your fingers. And so you are not your physical body. You are, in fact, a pattern of information. And when you die, that pattern of information goes to the cloud. Again, it's very convenient in this day and age, thank goodness, to use these kinds of internet analogies. I mean, for example, I might be able to bring up a picture of a tree on my computer monitor. Well, I know that's not a real tree, but it sure looks like one. And I can hit a button and I can print out a physical representation of that tree on a piece of paper. Or I can even, if I have a 3D printer, I can print out a little 3D tree. But ultimately, what we're talking about here is the fact that it's about that, again, that sort of particular energetic design that is information which can be expressed in many different ways. So if you have something on your computer and then that computer, you know, dies, well, hopefully you've uploaded it to the cloud. And if you do that, well, then, you know, it will still be accessible. Well, all of us are like little computers running around here. And physically, you know, it wears out at some point. And when that happens, your information is connected to the cloud. And when you connect to the cloud, well, then at that point, it seems like, apparently, according to what we know from near-death experiences and whatnot, you can choose whether or not you want to move to certain bandwidths or you want to stay closer to this one. And if you stay closer to this one, well, you're kind of missing out. I mean, you don't hear about the ghost of Albert Einstein or Thomas Edison or Mother Teresa. I mean, you always hear about ghosts of people who died tragically or somebody who maybe was a bad person. And so what that tends to tell us is that if you have a guilty conscience, it doesn't matter whether or not there is a God there that is going to judge you. If you believe there might be a God there that's going to judge you, then that might instill enough fear in you to prevent you from moving yourself on to these other bandwidths. And that's one reason why we have a lot of these quote-unquote ghosts that are in this realm that are ghosts of people who are depressed or lived, you know, dark lives. Additionally, you have people who were unfortunately, you know, superficially attached. I mean, they're attached to their treasure, to their home, or a particular person. And so what you end up with is this scenario in which you have certain spirits that tend to linger here, and usually not always, but usually they do it because that they're actually kind of small-minded. And I would say, Dave, that probably one of the reasons that you haven't experienced your mother is that your mother had a clear conscience and that she did what any logical person with a good heart would do. She moved on and explored other bandwidths.
Well, that's the hopes, I guess. Let's focus now on the thought forms, the manifestations, and the experiments that you did for the movie The Apparition. They asked you to run a series of experiments to use as part of their documentary for after the filming of the movie. Kind of walk us through this process and what exactly you did and what the end results were.
Well, this is a good one. I have been just a sucker for any type of technology I could get my hands on my whole life that I could experiment with. I mean, you tell me there's a gadget out there that's got some wires and some antennas and some knobs. I mean, I will send it to me. I'll buy that thing and I'll play with it. It doesn't matter if it works or not. If I get something and it doesn't work, then I say, fine, it didn't work. And you know, Dave, you and I have talked a lot about wishing machines, for example. You know, the very first time I got a wishing machine, I thought maybe this was a bunch of bunk, and I got it and I started playing with it, and you know, it actually started working. And I have played with every type of manifestation that you can imagine, whether it's wishing machines or we're dealing with adding electrostatic charges to a certain environment to try to enhance paranormal activity, or you know, bombarding an environment with electromagnetic fields to sort of jiggle everything around. I've done it all. And I was contacted, I think around 2010, by a producer-director with Warner Brothers who said, I have a movie in production right now called The Apparition. And the idea behind the movie was that there are these college kids who are using a bunch of like secondhand equipment in the college laboratory. And they are trying to create a tulpa like we've been talking about. And they succeed. And of course, it's a horror movie. So guess what? You know, it kills everybody. And frankly, Dave, I think it's been long enough. I can tell you the movie came out and it wasn't that great. All right. Sorry. But I was contacted by the production in the meantime. And they said, listen, honestly, we don't have any way of knowing how that you would make this look realistic. Like, we're storytellers. We're not scientists. We're not paranormal investigator guys. You know, you have a laboratory. How would you actually, you know, make this experiment happen if it were you? And I was like, oh, this is cool. So I went to my laboratory. I put all these pieces together after thinking about this. And I said, you know, guys, and I wrote a big report up about everything. And I said, I have taken this challenge so seriously that I think that if I actually hit the on button, I could do the experiment. Like, you know, this is, you know, maybe you guys are in Hollywood land, but you know, I'm here in my weirdo land and I could actually, you know, do this experiment. And so, they got, you know, really interested. They said, well, man, why don't we do it? You know, and so they sent a crew from Los Angeles and said to me, do the experiment. So I got together my team, like the best people that I have. And we put together an experiment, which is documented beautifully. If you get the Apparition movie on Blu-ray, it's one of the Blu-ray extras. It's like one of those behind the scenes things. They actually did three extras with us, and so, you know, we gave them a lot of content. But anyway, ultimately what we did was we took one person, a lady named Shelley Wright, and you know Shelley, Dave.
Yes.
And Yes, and Shelly is a paranormal investigator. She owns a shop here in Asheville, or in Asheville. I'm not in Asheville, but she owns a shop in Asheville, North Carolina, called Nevermore Mystical Arts. And we said, Shelly, you're going to be our subject. What we are going to do is we are going to hook your brain to an EEG machine. And that is a device that's going to pick up your brain waves. And then we are going to take whatever comes from your brain and we are going to magnify it so that it is the equivalent of at least 100,000 people all thinking about the same thing at the same time. So you know how big a football stadium is. I mean, you know, we're talking even bigger than that. So this is, you know, again, at least 100,000 people all thinking the exact same thing at the exact same time. We had her in a room. We had a doll. Turns out Forrest Connor, who was one of my great friends that I've known forever, he had this little tiki doll that was brought back to him from Hawaii that looked really creepy. And we're like, well, this will work, you know. So we put the tiki doll in another room. Again, she was isolated, so we wouldn't have any feedback. And in that room where the tiki doll was, we had that room just surrounded with all kinds of crazy equipment, okay? I mean, I'm talking about like a Schlieren optical imaging system so that we could see any change in air density. We had third-generation night vision goggles. We had shutter glasses that were – we could adjust the frequency so we could look at the room through or at different frequencies. I mean – We had everything you can possibly imagine. We had a plasma chamber producing plasmas. But ultimately, Dave, her brain waves were being directly connected to a Tesla coil that was amplifying and broadcasting her brain waves over a span of about 3 to 5 miles. So she sat there looking at this creepy little doll, projecting her brain waves, focusing on this thing, and I just kept cranking it. You know the Spinal Tap, you know, it goes, this one goes to 11.
Right.
You know? I think I took that one to 12 that night.
Wow.
And finally everything just blew. Like I blew everything after about, I don't know, 20 minutes. And, so after that, it was like we sat around, the dust was settling, and we're all looking at each other, and it's just crickets, you know, like nothing's happening. And I'm like, dang, this didn't work. Because I would have loved nothing more than to have this, you know, all of a sudden Godzilla appears, or, you know, something happens, right? So we were like, well, it was a great experiment. Good old college try, you know, the cameras stopped rolling. Everybody went back to Hollywood, you know, oh well. And then, of course, 6 days later, all hell breaks loose. It didn't happen immediately. Now, I don't know what this whole 6-day thing is about. I don't know why it was, you know, who knows? Maybe in another case it would have taken 3 days or maybe 10 days, depending on the frequency you're playing with. So 6 days later, I'm sitting in the laboratory with Forrest and Shelley, and all of a sudden in the adjacent room where we have a kitchen, we hear this god-awful commotion. So we go in there, and every single cabinet door in the entire kitchen is open. Every door is wide open. I mean, that was shocking. And because, you know, I just walked from there and there was nothing weird. Then light bulbs start blowing.
Now, wait, this sounds like a horror movie. You mean light bulbs are actually exploding in your lab?
Well, but, you know,
or
they
are
weren't
they
exploding.
Popping and lights, okay, but they're burning out. It's like they're getting an overload of energy.
Yeah, you hear a pop and the bulb is gone. Yeah, okay. And I mean, I think at one point in one day, all but one of the light bulbs in that entire level of the building blew in one day. Okay. And then, and you know, the funny thing is, at first, we didn't even pick up on what was happening because we had all, in our minds, we had done that experiment. It didn't work. And so we're just like, oh, well, and we had already kind of started forgetting about it. So we were really naive and this stuff started happening and it, gradually it began to occur to us like, whoa, okay, something weird's going on here. So the here's the clincher for me. And it gets better than this, by the way. I went into the laboratory, and this was – okay, this is a two-story building, and our lab was on the bottom floor. I went over there at about 2 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. There was nobody else there. There were no other cars parked there. It was obvious to me there was nobody there. I walk into the section of the lab where we had done this experiment. Standing there – I don't know. Who knows what I was. I think I was messing with the capacitor. And I hear these very clear, distinct footsteps come down from upstairs. And I look over and I see this big, shadowy form. And I immediately assume this is Forrest. And Forrest, at times, I've known him for a long time, he can be a bit of a prankster. So I look over and I see this shadowy form there and I say, very funny, Forrest. Oh, who knows what I said? But I made some kind of comment and then I went back to work and I look up and this form is still standing there. And after, you know, maybe a minute, it just seemed weird that he's just standing there. And so I go walking over there, boom. Disappears. At that point, Dave, the hair on the back of my neck stood up, and suddenly the reality set in. Like, holy crap, I'm the only one here, and I was just looking at a physical form.
Now, was it a highly detailed physical form that you were looking at?
No. The edges were very defined. See, Forrest is 6'3". I'm 6'2", and Forrest is 6'3". So I've always been very aware of his size, that he's just a little bit taller than me.
Right.
But he has more bulk than I do. And so I looked over, and I'm like, okay, this is Forrest. It was a big, tall, dark, bulky form. Well, from there... So I start telling everybody, all right, I've seen this thing that I can't explain. We're going to put cameras around here because I got to capture this. And we start, and so we start putting cameras all over the place downstairs. There's like game cams, you know? So I had game cams. I'm setting up everywhere. I'm thinking, my God, we've hit the jackpot. We're going to get this thing. We created a TOLPA. We have got to send this to Warner Brothers. This has got to go on the extras. Like, you know, right. We did this. And then Forrest started dating a girl. I won't use her name. And he called me up and he said she had the most freaky experience of her life and doesn't want to even ever step another foot in the building. And I said, what are you talking about? She told me face to face that upstairs, there's another kitchen. She was standing in the upstairs kitchen and she swore to God that she looked over and she saw the same thing that I saw. A big, I'm talking coal, black, solid form. I'm talking like not something that just, you know, a black color, but something that almost seemed to absorb the light, almost a void of light. And she said that she looks over and she said that this thing was shaking its head back and forth like something out of a horror movie at light speed, just some kind of a blur, just, you know, left to right, going back and forth. And she just dropped whatever she had and screamed bloody murder. She actually said she almost fainted. It was so scary. She didn't outright faint, but she almost did. And from there, everything became even worse. It became even more extreme. And we actually ended up selling that whole building. And I told my wife, Lauren, tonight that I was going to come on your show tonight and tell this story. And I said, God, Lauren, there's a part of me that wants to go over and talk to the person who lives in that, because somebody's living there now.
Oh, good grief.
But I'm kind of afraid to open the door and face that person and be like, well, I might have something to do with what you're living with right now.
Yeah, but I swear we may have opened the portal to the seventh layer of hell, but it was for a movie. So, you know, let's look at the upside of this.
I swear to you that is a true story. And I could talk about, you can probably tell, you and everybody listening can probably tell, this is such an amazing story. I could talk about this for hours and hours and hours, all the things that happen, but I'm getting carried away. I know we're on a radio program here. So, Dave, that is one of the most clear examples that I have had in my own life of seeing a creepy-ass tulpa.
Yeah, that's going to rank up there pretty high to have that kind of experience. Now, I'm curious if this affected your test subject. Did Shelley, since she was the manifester, if you will, did this create a bond or link with her? Was she having continued activity after 6 days?
Well, you know, Dave, since that, Shelley has continued creating various kinds of tulpas on her own, which is weird to me because it's like the tulpa that she created there did not leave that space, apparently, because she never said that that thing followed her home. But she saw enough in terms of results from that experiment to realize that she had, you know, well, I guess that maybe anybody can do this, but especially it gave her the confidence that Shelley now has gone on to create other tulpas. And I have actually worked with her on some other experiments creating tulpas. Maybe 2 years ago, I said to her at Christmas time, let's create something that's less insidious, maybe a Santa Claus tulpa or something like that. And she swears to God that she created the Santa Claus tulpa. So, you know, I know we're coming up on a break here, but
no,
man,
actually, we're good. We're good to keep rolling as long as you'd like to share stories with me. Now, that's intriguing to me. She just continues. You know, we did the Theater of the Mind, which talks about a young guy who tried an experiment and, as you heard, did not turn out so well and was very terrifying to him. It almost seemed to be warning him to stop messing with this. Do you think the idea of setting forth an intention to manifest and create something of a paranormal ilk, could that be a bad idea for people, lay people out in the field that maybe are not real familiar with what to do once they've opened that door?
Well, you know, last year I published a book called Use the Force, A Jedi's Guide to the Law of Attraction. And by the way, this was before that I started writing it even before I knew there was going to be a new Star Wars movie. And when I've done all these experiments with wishing machines, I have always been, you know, questioned about, you know, whether or not this is the same kind of force that's being used. And I think it is. And I hope anybody listening who doesn't, again, know what I'm talking about, please go to my website, joshuapwarren.com. And there's no period after the P, and learn about these machines and how they manifest things. And the reason I bring this up is that sometimes people who are interested in manifestation, they say, look, you know, I want to manifest more money, or I want to manifest a better relationship, or I want to manifest a spiritual experience, or I want to manifest a ghost, or I want to manifest a UFO. It's all the same kind of thing. But people always inevitably say, I'm afraid to try to do this, whether I'm using a wishing machine or a magic wand or whatever, because I'm afraid it's going to be like the old leprechaun story where, you know, you wish for something and you get it, and then the leprechaun goes, hee-hee, now here's the bad thing, you know. It's like the monkey's paw story. You know what I'm talking about, Dave, where, you know, the guy says, I want more money, and then his son gets killed in his factory job, and they show up and say, here's the money, you know. And so there is this sense that a lot of people have that when you try to manifest something, it's a very tricky thing, and you have to be careful because there are potentially negative repercussions. But what I'm here to tell you is that what I've seen is that when you try to manifest something, if you only have positive intentions, then you will only create a positive manifestation. When we were doing the experiment I just told you about, we were trying to manifest something creepy and scary, and we did. But in my other manifestation experiments, I have tried to manifest good things, positive things. And when you do that, you can only get something it's like a computer. It's like, you know, garbage in, garbage out or whatever. I mean, if you have a good mindset and you approach this stuff from a positive perspective and point of view, then you can only create positive things. It's that, you know, for every reaction, there's an opposite but equal reaction, I guess. Call it karma, call it what you will. But for people who think like, I don't even want to dabble into this, whether it's by magical or technological means, I'm here to tell you, look, I think this is what we do all the time. Whether you're aware of it or not, I think every single one of us is manifesting things every single day. And if you do it without direction, it just becomes a bunch of noise. But if you become aware of it and you start thinking about it and you start using certain techniques to control it, well, then you can create the specific things that you want to create. And some people create bad things. Some people create good things. Some people create scary things. But we are, I believe, here in the middle of this big classroom called life because we're supposed to master this ability.
I like the concept, right? You know, what we focus on, what we manifest is up to us. And that's why I think it is important that what you think about, not only what you want to manifest or create, but what you think about yourself can be so damning and damaging to you. You need to really be cautious. And I know a lot of people say, you know, the rah-rah hippie hug the tree crap of, you know, I'm good enough, I'm kind enough. It sounds silly, but it's a much better focus than I suck, I'm a loser, I always. And when you create that reality for yourself, you're creating a dam to hold back what your potential could be. And I know, again, I know that sounds all hippy-dippy, but the honest to God truth is I've seen it happen throughout my life. When I start to buy into the nonsense, you know, this last 65 days has been one of the most trying and devastating in my life. But as soon as I flipped it on its ear and I started to look at things differently, I saw a totally different perspective. And it was like, you know, remember the Poseidon Adventure, the mm-hmm. movie where the ship flips over because of a rogue wave that knocks it upside down. And mm-hmm. the whole deal is now down is up, up is down, and you need to find a new way to the light. And as soon as I did that, it began opening doors. And I didn't focus on drowning. I focused on, all right, what's the next step? Where do we go from here? You know, how do we climb up that rung and make it to safety? And that opened up a totally different paradigm. And I'm seeing that open up itself to me in my own lifetime. So I want our listeners to realize, and that's part of why we do the show, educate, enlighten, entertain you, scare you once in a while, but maybe give you some insight to just how powerful we are as human beings and what we're really capable of. If we can create the dark and scary, there's nothing that can keep us from creating the light and airy and giving us a whole new way to live our lives. And I think that's very important for everyone that listens to this podcast. Don't always live in a constant state of fear. That's when I go to places and they'll tell me, aren't you afraid? No, I came here to look for ghosts, right? I'm open to that idea. I'm open to that manifestation, to that intention and being a part of the experience that I'm here for. And living in a constant state of fear, those are the people I see freaking out at haunted locations that have never had a demonic force there. There's nothing evil reported, but they're the ones that get scratched. They're the ones that get poked or pulled or pushed. And I often wonder how much of it is their own energy pushing back because that's what they've created for themselves.
Well, yeah, I mean, ultimately, a lot of these people, and we've met plenty of them, they seem to relish the experience of being abused. And I don't know how to explain that, but it's a certain mindset that some people have, and it's almost like they don't want it to stop. And as they move throughout their lives, they say, "Oh, it's following me. Oh, yeah, I'm a haunted person. It's following me wherever I go. I can't get away from it." And you're thinking, well, yeah, maybe you are a haunted person because you're creating your own haunting. You know, you're manifesting this activity around you. And that's why, you know, in my book, How to Hunt Ghosts, I mean, I talked about the poltergeist phenomenon as being a phenomenon that basically is manifested, really. I mean, that's the simplest way of putting it, that it doesn't matter if you're young or old. There are people out there who, for whatever reason, are attracted to this idea that, you know, creepy and spooky things occur around me. And they'll tell you that. You know, you talk to them more than 5 minutes, it'll come out. You know, they'll tell you. And I guess it's because they're excited by it, which, you know, we can understand. But then you take a guy like myself. I mean, I have been studying this for 25 plus years professionally, meaning that I've gotten paid to do it. And I can tell you that, yeah, there have been a few isolated experiences I've had where I think something has, quote unquote, followed me back home. But for the most part, when I walk into my home, you know, it's a place of refuge wherever I happen to be. And, I don't have demons or some kind of other, you know, Papa Bawas or any kind of – thank God I don't have Papa Bawa. You know who he is, right, Dave?
No, I'm not familiar. Who's Papa
Bawa? Are you serious?
You know, it's one of those things. I hear so many things over the last 12 years of doing this show. I may be familiar with it, but it's escaping me currently. What is Papa Ballas?
Papa Bawa.
Papa Bawa. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's P-O-P-O-B-A-W-A. Papa Bawa is he's the worst of the worst. And I have to think about this a little bit because, well, you know, I want to be careful that I don't say things that are coming across in a raw way here, but Papa Bawa.
If you're uncomfortable with it, I'd rather you don't talk about it. I don't want to. People can do research on it themselves. If it's one of those things that you're worried about how it might be perceived or that it might send people on to a way of starting to try to dig into that and opening up, a crap storm for their own lives, I don't want to do that either. So, if you'd prefer to pass over it, that's fine by me.
Well, okay, let me put it this way. Mm-hmm. Papa Bawa is a 7-foot-tall demon with big leathery wings who appears in the middle of the night around certain parts of Africa. I believe I want to say Zanzibar, and does the most horrible things to men in the middle of the night. And if you read some of the stories about Papa Bala, I mean, for example, the 40 End Times had a classic article about him and classic artwork that was done several years ago. The scariest stuff you could imagine. I mean, I did talk about this once on Coast to Coast AM, Dave, and basically Papa Bala, he does these most just horrific things to men, and then he says, if you ever... No. Okay, here's what he says. He says, if you don't go out there and tell everybody what I have done to you, then I'm going to come back, and it's going to be 10 times worse next time. So when I think about, like, horrible, creepy, monstrous things, if I had to make a list of the top 10, I'm pretty sure Papa Bala would be there at number one. So well, I'll just say that.
That's something good to leave our listeners with before bedtime. Just don't focus on that before sleep tonight, folks. Giant leathery demonic things that do horrific things to men. And again, that almost sounds like what we talked about in the Theater of the Mind this evening. The story from our listener, what he may have manifested. Very weird. Yeah, it's something you have to be careful of, just like working with a Ouija board. There's nothing inherently evil about manifestation or intention. There's nothing inherently evil about working with a piece of cardboard and plastic to try to communicate to the other side. It's what is the intention behind it, or, you know, what are you hoping to get from it? Most people, Josh, as we know, go to do the Ouija board at parties, and they're trying to scare each other. They're trying to get that girl to cuddle up a little closer or freak out their friends. And, you know, I've been there. I've done those parties. We've had fun when I was a teenager doing that kind of stuff. And it worked. You know, it got the girl a little bit closer. We got unnerved and freaked out by it. That's for sure. You know, afterwards, we were sitting there looking at the Ouija board, kind of chit-chatting about what just happened. And the planchette shook and slid across the board on its own and hit the ground. And there was a scream. And that was it for the night. We were pretty much done with the Ouija board. But again, I often wonder how much of that is really dark and nefarious forces, or is just a smart-ass ghost thinking it'd be fun to screw with a bunch of teenage kids.
Well, you know, Dave, I did an experiment a few years ago that I like to bring up, where I took two ladies who were very proficient, in their own words, at using the Ouija board. And they sat down and they were able to get these sort of amazing responses from the Ouija board. And then I blindfolded both of them and asked them to repeat it. And suddenly the Ouija board started speaking gibberish. And at that point, I began to feel, well, okay, I think that at very most, the Ouija board operates more as a tool. It's not like that thing is taking on a life of its own. It's helping you to channel your own subconscious knowledge or intelligence. And this past fall, Dave, I had a Ouija board experience that made big news. This was covered by, you know, ABC, and it was all over. I mean, I could go down the list.
Name dropper.
I know. This is like another hour-long conversation, by the way.
Well, we'll come back to that. Just give us the taste of what happened, and we'll certainly visit with you again on another show about this.
Yeah, well, the essence is I got information in a seance through a Ouija board. And again, at the time, I'm kind of like, you know, rolling my eyes. I got information from a Ouija board that opened a can of worms like you would not believe, that created this chain reaction of events that ended up manifesting these sort of historic revelations that previously were unknown. And it involves Al Capone, and it's so nuts. This whole thing actually made me sort of go back and reevaluate how the spirits communicate with us in general. So it's a good one. Hopefully I can come back on your show again soon and give the whole story, because it's one of those that deserves a little time, step by step, to explain why something from a Ouija board ended up blowing my mind.
Well, as long as your mom keeps up her payments to me to be your friend, I'll bring you back, Joshua. That's the way I work. You know it. We're coming up near the end of the show here, dealing with thought forms and manifestations. I know, is it the golem from the Jewish faith, kind of the clay creature that they build and then put the intention into it to do their bidding? Is that, would you consider that a thought form since they're creating something, you know, almost like the Frankenstein monster? You're putting it together and then giving it the spark of life with intention.
Yeah, absolutely. A golem would be an example of that from Jewish mysticism. You know, it seems like every ancient culture has some kind of a version of this. And the funny thing is, it seems like that ancient people were even more aware and accepting of this than modern people are. I mean, tonight, hopefully we've done a good job of trying to educate the listeners who may not have been familiar with this territory about, you know, what this is. But I believe in the ancient world, ironically, when people knew less about technology, they knew more about this kind of thing. And they accepted that, you know, humans could externalize their thoughts and somehow create these forms. That's where the word tulpa is an ancient Tibetan word, and which means external thought form. And so you find all kinds of examples of this in cultures from all around the world among people thousands of years ago. But just because we in this day and age have been so distracted to unfortunately sort of forget about it doesn't mean it's not still happening, and not only happening, but happening more than ever, because we have these incredible visual stimuli that ancient people didn't even have. So there is no telling the degree of thought forms that we're creating now. And yet, ironically, we have even less understanding than ever, I think, of what we're doing.
We are. I'm going to be a part of an investigation at the Oddfellows Asylum, the Belvoir Winery in Missouri. We'll be doing that in July. Tickets are up and on sale right now at darknessevents.com. And I know I wanted to work on some experiments, especially with Bill Chappell bringing some new equipment, to see about manifestation. If we can get a room full of people focused on a spirit, a creation, we can focus on it and then start to do EVP, electronic voice phenomena work with it, to see if we can get responses from the ghosts that we are creating. And that's going to be part of our experiments for the trip. We might even do some of that at the Palmer House event we're doing here in February. So I'm psyched about this, and I'd like to talk to you about setting up some parameters, because I know you've got some books that have been written on ghost hunting and investigating and experimentation, and I'd love to kind of pick your brain to try some new experiments with our listeners at some of these live events. So we'll do that off air if you don't mind, Josh.
Well, I would absolutely be delighted to be a part of that. And also, Dave, I want to let you know that I made a very bold proclamation earlier in January. I said that I believe that 2017 will be the year when we finally prove that ghosts are real. Now, look, I'm old enough at this point in my life to see how quickly a year flies by. And I didn't just post that, you know, after a night of drinking tequila. I posted that because, there, you know.
I think this is the year we're going to have a ghost.
Yeah, I'm working on an actual project. Right. It's called the Mobius Mission, and there is a very, very small number of people that I'm going to, over the next week or two, start bringing into this project. And I'm hoping that you will be one of those people. I'll email you and we'll talk about it. It requires very little. You just have to pay me about $100,000 and you're there, man. You're in like Flynn, right?
Well, just tell your mom to stop sending me checks for 2 or 3 days and we should be even.
But no, seriously, it's a groundbreaking research program that is taking whole new parameters that have never been applied to paranormal research before and bringing them into the world of scientific credibility. And so this is something that we'll be talking about more, but the idea here is to gain the absolute best foolproof visual evidence for ghosts and UFOs that will stand up to the most hardcore scrutiny that has ever been collected. And I want to invite everybody listening to this show right now to be one of the first people to get access to this evidence as it's presented. All you have to do is just sign up for my free e-newsletter. It's free and spam-free. Again, joshuapwarren.com. Sign up for it, and you'll get to see some of the stuff that we're going to collect this year.
Exciting. Thank you so much for being a part of our show with us and launching into this first week, our wrap-up episode. Josh, it's always a pleasure chatting with you, and we look forward to many more visits here in Beyond the Darkness.
Again, congratulations, Dave, and hey, thank you so much for having me on, my friend. I really appreciate it.
We'll be back with you, Supernatural News and Parashare with Tim Dennis, Dave Schrader. Special thanks to our guest this evening, Joshua P. Warren, here in Beyond the Darkness.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No